This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I always joke about Alexa. We use her for a lot, but we don't quite trust her.
That's what many people are saying. Actually, my mom bought my dad one of those. It wasn't an Alexa. It was a Google Home thing.
Right.
And he returned it right away. He's like, I don't want it.
Yeah. it's not for everybody. And I don't blame, because it was a little bit of a struggle. But sometimes I think maybe I know that our information is commodified. But if it's out there for everybody to have, it lowers its value, right?
That's a good point.
So, yeah. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, people still can manipulate it and use it to manipulate people, and there's a lot of scary stuff that can be happening. But I'm just thinking, well, wait, but it's got to have lost some of its currency because so many people are sending you their cookies and taking a look at you, you know.
That's a really good point. I never thought about it like that. And that is, it's funny because that other book you see there, Influence, I swear I did not put that there by,
No, that's all right. That's what you're reading, right?
But it's so funny that you mention that because that's the principle of scarcity.
Oh.
Which he talks about in this book, Dr. Cialdini. There's 7 levers of influence, he says. One of them is scarcity, so the less available something is, the more valuable it is. And he talks about how you can use that to your advantage to get compliance requests. He gives a lot of examples like advertising or sales, when people say, I don't know how long we'll have this product for, so you should buy it now. Limited time exclusive offer.
But then they run that same ad saying that same thing for 6 months or more. Yeah.
That's just, yeah. He gives too in the book defenses against it and how to know when it's being used against you, which I think was really interesting. I believe with scarcity, he was saying when people try to tell you that something's in limited supply, you start to get feelings. I feel it all the time, like a fear of missing out. And you start to, it starts to get a rise out of you. And he said, whenever you start to feel that, stop and just think for a second, use your, as Danny Kahneman says, your type 2. I think it was like your type 2 or your system 2 thinking, which is slow, deliberate, logical. Type 1 is fast, emotional, super quick, reactive. And that's what he says in the book. Just slow it down and just think for a second. Do you actually need that dry cleaner or like, do you actually need that, washer or what have you?
Yeah. Cause
that's pervasive. I feel like throughout this whole, my social media generation, it's just fear of missing out.
Right.
Like people see pictures and they say, I wish I was there. I want to be there. Something like that.
Right. Well, when I'm doing a book signing, I'll usually put out about 5 copies of each book. Even though I've got a box here, and mm-hmm. I don't want people at the end of the line to think they're going to miss out, but mm-hmm. I do, you know, so I'll put more out as I need, but it's, I just think that if I were to stack up 20 books, 20 copies of each, I don't know, maybe it would be just fine, but there's a thing, I just have a feeling that it they might just sit there.
100%, you are.
Well,
you're using the principle,
okay,
Tom.
Well, I just noticed things after, you know, I've been doing it for about 5 years. So.
Yeah. Wow, that's really cool. That makes me happy that this lever of influence works.
Yeah. which lever are you talking? You mean the
scarcity?
The scarcity. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool. And for those, sorry, let me give a quick intro, Tom, because I've actually, I started. My name is Chris. This is Chitash. With me is local author Tom Carr. Tom, would you please just give a brief introduction on yourself?
Sure. Well, I have had 3 books published so far. Blood on the Mitten is the first one. Then My Bad, and the third one is Dark Side of the Mitten. And all of them are compilations of crimes or just dark historical stories from Michigan's past or near past. And myself, I worked as a journalist. I was at the Traverse City Record Eagle for for about 20 years. And then I have done stuff for National Public Radio, as well as freelancing after I left the Record Eagle. And about in 2015, I got a message from a friend of mine, 2 friends of mine, Ann Stanton and Heather Shaw, and I had worked with Ann at the Record Eagle, and they were starting a publishing company with a third friend, who had, he was Doug Weaver, and he had operated the publications end of the Kansas City Star and was moving up to Michigan anyway, up in Traverse City. So they asked me to write something for them, and so we kind of worked out what we would do, and I've always been interested in crime as well as history. And I tend to get more turned on, I guess, by the ones that are in the past, because it allows me to escape a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. And to really kind of put myself into a frame of what Michigan, the world, and the people were like at that time.
For people who don't know, Traverse City, we're talking northern Michigan.
Yes.
Northern Michigan up by...
Well, with the hand...
With our hands, yeah.
It's in the, what do you call that... Between the pinky, it's in the crotch of the pinky. Would you call it that? I don't know.
That's a good way to describe it.
Okay.
Yeah. Leelanau, right? Leelanau Peninsula?
Leelanau Peninsula is the pinky. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's where there's a lighthouse, right? Old Mission. Is
yep.
It?
There are, well, Old Mission is on the Old Mission Peninsula, which is actually between the pinky and the mainland. It's a little peninsula, very thin peninsula there, but very scenic, and people, a lot of wineries out there and stuff like that, and wine, and a lot of very pricey homes being built out there. Let's see, yeah. And Traverse City's at the base of that. Mm-hmm. It's a nice place.
And it's fairly populated, right? Like 100,000-ish?
No. It is... It gets up to that. The general area gets up to that in like the summer.
Okay.
From what I've heard. But year round, you know, if you took the outlying counties, because Traverse City itself is like 14 or 15,000 without a lot of room to grow.
Oh, wow.
But it's spilled over into the townships and stuff like that. And so that's, I'm just talking about Traverse City proper there, because mm-hmm. it hasn't increased its boundaries or anything like that. So. It's but the area itself is growing quite a bit, but mm-hmm. you know, it's not like a, you know, it's not anywhere near like Lansing or Grand Rapids or anything like that.
Okay. And you had mentioned this this newspaper.
Traverse City Record Eagle. Right. Yeah.
That's like the main newspaper of
Traverse City? That is the main newspaper. And there's still newspapers have been struggling, but they're still putting out a good product, and they're still they're down to 5 days a week, I guess.
Okay.
Because they had expanded from 6 to 7 when I first got there in like 1989-ish.
Uh-huh.
And they were in the process of doing that. But then, you know, they had to dial back. Of course, Craigslist killed a bunch of advertising revenue, you know, for the classified departments for them and papers everywhere. Mm-hmm. Plus the content, you know, it's like, how do we get people to pay for the content? We can't, you know, they were putting it out for free for a while, but they're not making anything off the ads and blah, blah, blah. So it's just been a real struggle for newspapers to figure out how to keep going. And, I think the Record Eagle is a much smaller staff, and they do not publish on, you know, they'll do breaking news online, but they won't publish an actual paper on Mondays and Tuesdays mm-hmm. anymore for the last, I don't know how many years. But wow. So, yeah, but it's like, you know, a lot of papers have done that, reduced the number of days they publish and just to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And we need them. We need newspapers.
Would you say, are there newspapers out there that have, like, their business has not decreased over these last few years with digital and stuff like that? Like, and I'm talking,
yeah, maybe some
New
of
York
the
Times.
Ones. Yeah. Well, because I subscribe to the New York Times.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to afford to subscribe to the newspaper edition of it. But I subscribe online, yeah,
oh, okay.
And I subscribe to the Detroit Free Press online. And but we subscribe to the Record Eagle, and we have an online subscription, but I generally read that mm-hmm. in the newspaper edition because we still get that delivered. So
okay,
that's kind of it does make me sad because not only did I work for newspapers, my dad worked for the Detroit News while I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I delivered the Detroit News around wow. Northville back in the very early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a big part of my family.
Yeah.
But I also think it's been a big part of the United States, and we need people out there keeping an eye on what's going on,
mm-hmm.
particularly with the people in power.
Would you say, is that kind of what inspired you to end up working for the newspaper in the Traverse City Eagle?
Well, I kind of originally thought I'd go into TV journalism.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was around people who were kind of snobbish about it, and that kind of painted my image, which is kind of, you know, I shouldn't have been that impressionable, but... But I do enjoy writing, and I enjoy writing on Deadline, and I enjoyed all those years of chasing down the news. And the thing about, I think I ended up being glad that I went into print journalism because their standards are very high, and I'm not saying that others aren't, but you know, I think across the board, I think they're you know, generally their standards are high, and it's also the production aspect. I've done some radio work and I really, really enjoyed it. But as a freelancer, it's hard to make a go of that because there are so many more steps involved in producing a radio piece than there is in writing a newspaper story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's, with that, it's you interview, you research, you get the info, you come back, you write it,
mm-hmm.
you rewrite it, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the listening to the sound that you and it's fascinating, and I love it, and I have very much respect. But I would make a similar amount for this radio piece as opposed to when I was as a freelancer, as opposed to a written piece, mm-hmm. just a print piece. Or online piece, and I'd get my money. And it would just be such a quicker thing. Because I'd been practicing it for years, too. So mm-hmm. partially that was quick. I'd be a lot faster at radio if I did it full time ever. But, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when you were at the newspaper, I had read something online that you yourself did some investigative journalism.
Yeah.
And was it centered around things like particular things that you've written about in your books, crimes and such?
Well, one crime that I didn't really do much investigative on it, but I followed it along, and actually drove my editors a little bit nuts because I wanted to keep at it, and they want, you know, go on to other stuff. And it is in that book. It is in the first book, Blood on the Mitten, and it's in a chapter titled A Convenient Confession. So that is the closest I've been to any case, in mm-hmm. that I covered it for years. Mm-hmm. Any case.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
That I've put in my books, I mean.
Okay.
So this was 1996, and it was a woman in Kalkaska, 68 years old, widowed, and she'd worked as a teacher's aide at the local schools, so she knew some kids, and somebody came by, and she was, you know, known to be welcoming. Some kid came in and ended up beating her, molesting her, you know, and then
wow.
And they put her in the trunk of her own car.
Jeez.
And turned it on with the garage door closed. So she ultimately died of asphyxiation.
Uh-huh.
Really horrible, wow. Sad case. But also DNA played a part in it because one young man confessed,
mm-hmm.
but he made a false confession. But when it came out that the DNA did not match him and corroborated with the fact that he said, I didn't really do it. They had invested a lot, you know, I think had invested a lot in this case being apparently solved.
Uh-huh.
So they continued with him. They tried him. They convicted him. The jury convicted him, even though the DNA did not match him. But their theory was that he had an accomplice, and the accomplice left his DNA all over everything. But he left no DNA.
Mm.
But I've talked to experts, crime scene experts, and they said that murder is such an intimate act. I mean, unless you're a sniper or something like that, you know,
yeah,
killing somebody from far, you're going to leave some DNA at the scene.
Yeah.
You know, if you're strangling, stabbing, beating, whatever,
yeah,
somebody, you're going to leave your DNA there.
Wow. And this particular guy.
But he didn't leave any. And so he was, so anyway, he ended up spending what would it have been, because 96, and then it was 2013, I think, when he finally got released. But so that was about 17 years, that's my quick math there, yeah, about 17 years. In prison. Now, it's hard to make really him a cause celeb because he was a punk who was in trouble, but he wasn't a murderer.
Mm.
And he would have been in prison for a chunk of that time anyway, because he had been he was 18 having sex with his 15-year-old girlfriend. And so he was, you know, at the same time serving time for that.
Yeah.
But still, to be branded a murderer and to go through that for 17 years, which was, I think, longer than he would have served for the other. But anyway, because he was, when the Michigan, or when the Innocence Project got a hold of the case,
yeah,
and they had lawyers and law students from U of M and University of Chicago working on it, and they got a judge, they put together a case and asked the judge to mandate that they put the DNA evidence on the nationwide database. That's where they were dragging their feet for all those years. And I would mention that in a story every now and then, but you know, anyway, like, but, and even when I went to freelancing, I still covered it some for Interlochen Public Radio and others, as things would happen. But anyway, so it was interesting to see him finally, you know, released and having the case, but mostly, you know, having the real killer finally nailed and found out. And he was a guy from who had actually passed a lie detector test early on in the going.
Wow.
So anyway, that's the one that I'm most, that's the one that I know the best. I mean, that's the one that I just wrote from what I had experienced for the most part, you know, and updated it and whatever. But the other ones were new to me. And I mean, as far as I finding out the details and a lot of interesting cases that I've.
Yeah. with this one that you were just describing, was this one that made national headlines?
It did. It did make statewide and national headlines as well.
Wow.
So it did get, because it was, you know, there were some elements in there that really, that made it unique and also, you know, kind of really modern, because DNA evidence until I think sometime in the early 90s wasn't even usable. It just hadn't advanced far enough to really be of use, from what I understand. That I might be off on the time frame there, but it wasn't that long ago.
Did OJ change that? Because that case was like 1996, wasn't, or 1994?
Did they have? They didn't. Or I don't know if I don't really know. I'm sorry, I can't say because I haven't looked into that enough. But but John Norman Collins, who killed young co-eds in Ann Arbor and Ipsy back in 1969, but he did kill like six, I think it was, in Michigan and one in California. But originally they thought he was seven in Michigan and one in California. But there was a young woman whose body was found near where he was leaving bodies, and so it was logical that they would think about that. But about 30 years after he was convicted of all those, somebody said, well, this one just doesn't seem to fit. And it was a young woman by the name of Jane Mixer, who was a U of M student who had gotten a ride from a stranger supposedly back to her home in Muskegon. And she was found later dead, but she was also found shot. And Collins's victims were all strangled or stabbed. So somebody about 30 years later said, this doesn't fit. And so they did a DNA search, and they found another man who was the guy who killed her about 35 years later, and they convicted him, which was very good. But yeah, that doesn't diminish John Norman Collins's terribleness at all. But yeah,
wow.
It's cool that they got they finally solved that one piece that just didn't quite fit.
Yeah. Reading through your book, it's hard for me to imagine such like brutality, I guess you could call it, in some of these very rural places that we have in Michigan, or like places that are not very populated, places where it's, very rural, lots of land, not a lot of people. But there's a lot of those cases in your book.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and it become kind of a cliche, whenever anything horrible happens up in my neck of the woods, and then and you watch it on TV, and almost every time you're gonna, they're gonna interview somebody who says something along the lines of, "Well, this is why we left the big city, to get away from this kind of stuff," or somebody who might say, "You don't expect that sort of thing up here." But it's like, you know, but they say that every time something horrible happens up there. But I think it's just that I think that's interesting that you bring that up, because I think that is a misconception that a lot of people have, that just because you know, there's fresh air and this, you know, there's still some awful things.
Open spaces.
And there's still people who are you know, there's still bad people, and there's, or bad situations that lead to this or that, or, so it's, And also I found that it, not only in, place, but in time, people have this image of things, horrible things didn't happen maybe, you know, 100 years ago. And that's another thing that I talk about, and it's like, you know, there's always been, you know, bad people, sick people, whatever, to do some awful things. It's just that news didn't travel as fast, and you might not hear about one that happened, you know, halfway around the world, where now you will, or even have, you know, on the other side of this country. But
that's true. You know, I've read about like the Revolutionary War, Civil War, and I have this kind of, or before reading intently about it, I had this notion that, oh, this was a very nice war. Like it, you know, there was very primitive weapons, nothing, nobody really got hurt too bad. Yes, people died and stuff, but I don't know. I mean, I have a Civil War book over there and a Revolutionary War book. I've watched documentaries, and no, it was just as brutal, if not more, than modern warfare today. Because it was, I forget. Oh, Jeremy Suri was the guy who I was just listening to. He was saying how in the Civil War, it's all hand-to-hand combat. So you're looking people in the eye as you are doing your thing as you're killing them, which is brutal. And
half a million, that's true. Yeah.
Half a million Americans died in the Civil War, you know, worst war for us, I think, in terms of, lives lost compared to like the population at the time.
Yeah.
He was saying in modern warfare, it's a lot of it is bombs, missiles, drones, etc. It takes away that like mano-a-mano kind of feel for it, and it's changed a lot. But you're
And I think it also makes it it's almost, you see a drone strike or something like that, and it's almost like a video game. And so I think it kind of takes, I think it takes the humanity out of it, which I think is scary, because you need to realize that, you know, somebody's being killed here. And but I think it's really fascinating to look into that, which you obviously have, and to think of not only the battlefield, but if you got injured and didn't get killed, you were almost worse. I mean, they didn't even know enough to sterilize their tools, you know, that they were in the surgical tent. And
that's a good point.
And also, like in the Revolutionary War, where there was no photography yet and all that, I like you say, it always kind of seemed like, well, kind of a nice war, kind of a gentle war, I guess, you know. but can you imagine getting hit with a cannonball?
Which
and not dying? I mean, you'd still, Yeah.
I know it's crazy to think, and I'm glad now I have that perspective on it just from doing more deep dives into it. Yeah, it's, I think you were just saying it. There's always been bad people.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I still do get this sense of, I don't know what you would call it, where I think times were so much simpler back then,
yeah.
Which means like, and then I equate simpler with, you know, hunky dory and everything's like a good old time, but not really. I mean, you give a ton of examples in your book of that.
And I think anything also, I mean, I would love to do some time traveling, but I'm sure it would be scary in a lot of ways, but it also would be much more scary for anybody who's not a white male. I mean, it might've been Roy Wood Jr., the comic or somebody like that.
Oh, I'm familiar with him.
Yeah. Pointed that out. It's like, you know, time travel would not be a cool thing if you're a member of a minority or a woman, you know, I think. But even still, I mean, like, what if you did get injured and then they take you to a hospital where they, before, you know, before sterilization was practiced?
Yeah.
Or, wow, yeah. I think there are so many ways in which the world is so much better now, but
yeah,
there are also so many forces that threaten to destroy us. I mean, so that didn't exist back then. So mm-hmm. It's kind of a really mixed bag. But I mean, you know, the catastrophe has the ability.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
The potential to be, you know, so much more devastating mm-hmm. now. Anyway, I guess maybe I'm getting off topic. But.
Well, I'd like this. In your introduction, you give some statistics on Michigan as a state and like the crime rates. It seems like, and I did a little bit of research on this. It seems like it's come down a little bit over, especially like as of recent times, COVID and what have you.
Yeah.
But I know that it used to be not so great. I mean, Detroit being one of those cities where lots of violent crime was happening. But even Detroit, I think, has decreased a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are other cities that usually get listed above them, and St. Louis is one I often see.
I've heard that.
Atlanta, I've seen, you know, listed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that Detroit has, And this isn't, but my book really isn't about rates so much. I mean,
right.
I mentioned it, like I said in the intro, but it's more about the stories that really kind of stand out for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard to pick the stories that you did for your book? Because could you have included like so many more?
Oh, yeah. How I've gotten two more books so far. And I'm working on another compilation book, but I'm also working on a couple of books that are just single story books. I mean, not, you know, one case, one one crime or one criminal in the book.
Okay.
And so I'm working on three things right now. I think I've focused on the one, but anyway, what was the question again? I kind of took a detour, I think.
I don't even know if I had a question. It was just open-ended. How hard was it to pick?
Pick the stories. Yeah. Well, the first one, I thought about things that stuck out in my mind.
Yeah.
And primarily that occurred during my lifetime, or that, you know, I'd known about because they were so amazingly horrible, like the Italian Hall disaster in Calumet in 1913, or the Bath school bombing in 1927. Mm-hmm. But then I started out with a list, and I thought, well, I need to get it to a certain, you know, I need to add to it. So I looked at some other, you know, I like looked at other people's lists and saw, and I would take, you know, something, well, that doesn't quite do it for me, but this one is pretty fascinating. And so, you know, there, I think, in an old Free Press list, I think I got a couple of the cases and that turned out to be quite fascinating and stuff like that. And then so that from then on it was doing like Google searches on specific, you know, like Michigan crime or Upper Peninsula crime or this or that, you know, to just fill it out. So it wasn't I didn't weed out much in the first one, but then I've gotten people that have told me about them when I do signings and presentations and they often tell me about a case that struck them, and it's usually in the location or near the location where I'm speaking that particular time. So, I get a lot of story ideas that way. Mm-hmm. And on my next compilation book, the reason why I'm not ready to pitch that one just yet. Mm-hmm. Is that I've got a lot of good cases, but I don't have like the linchpin cases. I think I need two or three more that really stand out, because otherwise it's like building a mall without a Target or something like
an
that.
An Apple store.
Yeah. That's probably a dated reference, yeah.
Oh, Target.
Mall, no, yeah. Building malls.
Oh, mall, yeah.
Now they're just trying to keep them afloat.
Yeah, that's so true. I went to the mall over here.
12 Oaks.
Uh-huh. And, I mean, it was busy, but not like it was.
Not like it.
Everything seems to be online or... but I tell you what, those... I heard this. Small book retailers do well right now, even with Amazon and stuff.
Yeah. Well, they're bouncing back. And I think there was worry and you know, understandably so, back maybe 10 years ago or so, when e-readers were getting popular.
Oh, like a Nook
or Kindle. And so people are downloading. And I... still use my Kindle and I like it, but I also like to hold a book sometimes, you
absolutely.
Know, I mean, I like to take my Kindle with me and, you know, be, and also it's a cool way to read some of the classics that I feel I should read. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing like holding a book in your hands.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people have felt that. And so I've a lot of them went out of business a few years ago, but I've heard too, and I've read that those who survived that glitch are striving.
That's good.
A lot of them are striving.
That's
so
really good.
I mean, I hope that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe striving is a strong, but they're doing much better. So
that's good.
What did I say? Striving? That's
striving.
Not the word I meant.
Striving.
Thriving is what I meant. Sorry.
I knew what you meant.
That's why you never go at the first draft.
Have you ever looked into white collar crimes for a book?
Well, I
because I know you have the one about heists, bank robberies,
mm-hmm.
and I guess that would be kind of white collar ish. But to be honest, I don't know what the definition of white collar is.
Well, I think white collar crime is more like embezzlement or insider trading and stuff like that.
Okay.
And so it doesn't really have the, I mean, people get hurt from that stuff.
Oh yeah.
No
Bernie
doubt.
Madoff.
No doubt.
Yeah.
But it doesn't quite have the, I don't know. It's a little drier of a story, I think. And so I haven't done a lot with that, although I do have in my most recent book, Dark Side of the Mitten, which is subtitled Crimes of Power and Powerful Criminals in Michigan's Past and Present. Mm. And there was a guy in Traverse City who was bilking people out of money, and then he turned to actually robbing banks and stuff like that.
Oh, geez.
So I mean, there's that, and I have a chapter in there also about Jimmy Hoffa, but you know, kind of leading up to his disappearance, because I start by saying basically people don't a lot of people only know him as the guy who disappeared.
Yeah.
That's
how I know.
And not that it's a story that's never been told, but I told it my way and, you know, up to the point where he disappeared. But, I think that's a little bit not quite white collar crime. But then there's another one that might straddle it a little bit closely, again in my third book, which is about corruption in the state legislature, which led to murder in like 1947 or 48.
Really?
And it was, yeah, a congressman or a state senator going home in the middle of January, horrible day, and he was going down the highway. It was on a freeway, of course, at that time, but just probably a two-lane highway, mm-hmm. between Lansing and Jackson to go home to his district. And,
uh-huh.
and somebody, you know, like, edged him off the road, came in the car and shot him to death.
Jeez.
And it was, they were looking into corruption and payoffs and mob ties and stuff like that, mm-hmm. among members of the state legislature.
Oh, okay.
And he was scheduled to testify a little while after that. And so probably they didn't want what he had to say to be heard.
Wow.
His name was Hooper. Senator Hooper, I believe.
And this was in the 40s?
Yeah.
Wow. So he was going to testify regarding corruption in the state legislature.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he was killed on his way home to his district.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know about this.
Yeah. That's in my third book.
Wow. I'm sure there's tons of examples of government corruption.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I guess when they lead to murder, it makes it that much more, I guess,
intrigue. Just
in more intrigue, yeah. More interest in, because, I mean, if you watch one of the crime shows on TV,
mm-hmm.
they might have they'll touch on white collar crime, and I've seen when they've done that,
mm-hmm.
but not without it also involving a murder.
Yeah.
Because I mean that's what
yeah.
makes it the, you know, I mean, I guess it's, you know, that's the about the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
But
well,
I say about, because I'm not going to get into the philosophy of all this, you know, because there are worse things, actually. I think. But anyway, go ahead.
You're right, because I think about national stuff that makes national news.
Uh-huh.
There's always, there's an element to it that has murder in it. Like we had mentioned OJ, we had mentioned, or no, we haven't mentioned yet, but Gabby Petito was something recently, a year or two ago. JonBenet Ramsey, Scott Peterson, Casey Anthony.
Yep, those are the ones that really.
Yeah, they all involve, death.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of, like, even.
Well, there's actually a saying, and I don't know if it's more, I kind of associate it with TV news, because mm-hmm. that's where I've heard it in the context, but it could also be with, but anyway, with print, but the saying is, if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah. I find that to be pretty true.
Yeah.
From what I've seen.
Yeah. But yeah. So it's a cynical way to look at it, but it is, they do have to get people reading this stuff, and that's what people, that's what, if you put out a newspaper and then, a morning newspaper, and then go into, halfway through the morning, go into the coffee shop mm-hmm. and hear people talking about your stories, it's going to be those stories. Mm-hmm. They're not going to talk about the embezzlement. They're not going to talk about, and those things need to be covered, but it's,
I found over these last couple years, maybe with the advent of cryptocurrency, like we were talking about before we started recording, there's been some highlights of that aspect of crime, especially with cryptocurrency, because now you have people starting to get scammed for lots of money. There's the big example right now is what's happening with FTX, if you're familiar with that situation.
No.
Oh, it's a cryptocurrency. It was a cryptocurrency exchange and I believe a place where you can hold your cryptocurrency. And they went bankrupt because I believe they were shuffling funds, other people's money, into this other company to then place trades with other people's money that they didn't have. They weren't like, you're not supposed to do that. It's other people's money. And that's been getting a lot of attention right now. But it doesn't have a murder. That's the thing. So maybe if...
Well, see, now, that's the thing is, if you could take that as a fiction writer
mm-hmm.
and you could throw a murder in there.
Yeah.
And then you could tell, and you could probably tell a bit about how these scams work,
mm-hmm.
but it would be the murder that draws in the people to
100%
to learn the other.
Well, I didn't know this in one of your stories in the book.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I forget his name now. It was the prosecutor for somebody who was convicted, ended up writing a book. A very famous book. It was Anatomy of a Murder.
Oh, yeah. Robert Travers.
Yeah. And he was a former, I didn't know that either. He was a former Supreme Court justice or a former judge?
I believe he was on the state Supreme Court.
Oh, okay.
Or something. But he was a judge. He was a prosecutor and then a judge. And I don't remember exactly the latter and where he ended up. He might have been in the state Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, And yeah, he wrote that book, and there was a tape place in and around Marquette, and it was, they made a movie of it back in the 50s, and they filmed a bunch of it up in Marquette, and that was a really big deal. I mean, it's always, you know, pretty cool, glamorous thing to come to your town, but you know, the UP doesn't get a lot of that kind of attention, and yeah. So that's still a point of pride up there, I think.
Yeah. Was that movie, like, was it a big deal? Like, I saw you said James Stewart.
Yeah, James Stewart, and I don't remember who else might have been in it, but yeah, it's a well-known movie, and I think you could, you know, I think you could probably find it, you know.
On streaming somewhere.
Yeah, do your Fire TV thing. If you have it where it'll tell you where you can find any movie, mm-hmm. if it's available.
Was James Stewart, is that the same actor in It's a Wonderful Life?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
I'm familiar. It's one of my, I really like that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an annual must see around our house, yeah.
What would you say is like your favorite film surrounding like this, like the genre that you write about in true crime, mystery?
True crime film. Huh, that's an interesting question. I'm going to have to think about that.
Because I'll tell you mine.
Okay.
If you would categorize it as this, is JFK.
Okay. You know, I haven't seen it. But I should.
Really?
I should.
Oh, yeah. That's a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oliver Stone. And there's so much now. I was just listening to a podcast today on JFK.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff on that. So fascinating.
Well, some of my favorite books, if I could go veer it that way.
Yeah.
I'm trying to.
Absolutely.
I need something to jog my memory on crime movies, but. On books, In Cold Blood by Truman Capote is just a, you know, gripper. I mean, it just rings every bit of mm-hmm. Terror and sadness out of that. You know, it's just a. And I guess it took a toll on him because it was mm-hmm. He immersed himself in it and got mm-hmm. to know the guys, the murderers and about the family. Of course, it was too late to get to know them. But then also Michigan Murders, which is a I think it's Edward Keyes. It's like somebody Keyes, and that was about John Norman Collins' murders.
Oh, okay.
Now they gave him a different name, and so I guess there was a couple of things that weren't entirely. You know, they changed the victim and the murderer's names, if I remember correctly. It was a long while ago that I read it. But it still, you know, it was very good on giving the intrigue and how about the case and how it unfolded and how the murderers, you know, unfolded onto the onto the public and then finally how it was solved. And fascinating story, yeah.
Within Cold Blood, did you see the movie Capote?
I haven't. Robert Blake is in that, right? Oh, the movie Capote. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, there's a movie in Cold Blood too, but the movie Capote. And I'm sorry. The thing is, I'm catching up with some of these. I wasn't always a big theater goer. Mm-hmm. When you had to see those in the theater, and then we, you know, and I wasn't always a huge renter either, because I would like rent, you know, a series like Sopranos, because I didn't get HBO or something like that. So I watched that on, you know, renting it originally, and then with Breaking Bad, I watched it, downloading it, you know, $2.99 per episode. But I couldn't stop, so it'd be like, you know, downloading from Amazon before I had like Fire TV and stuff, and so I downloaded like episode by episode.
Oh yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman played Capote
Yeah. I've seen clips and he did.
He's a cool actor. Yeah.
Now they kind of went into how it kind of really took a mental toll on him, right?
I believe so. And to be honest, I actually haven't seen the full thing.
Okay.
But I believe so, yeah. I think the film covers him writing that book in cold blood.
Okay, yeah.
I want to throw out another really good crime book that I read was the Zodiac one.
Okay, I haven't read that.
I forget the author's name, but it was the basis, because they made a Zodiac movie too, with Jake Gyllenhaal. Robert Downey Jr. was in that one. The film was phenomenal too. Yeah. Really good. I think David Fincher directed that one. Really, really good. And the book was like a page turner. I mean, I couldn't put it down. Do you think with true crime or stories on murder, are they better told on pages or on the screen?
I think that depends on the teller.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people that, you know, it depends on what their medium is. You know, a bad book writer could get a hold of it, and a brilliant filmmaker could get a hold of it, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Brilliant, you know, writer or a terrible filmmaker. So it would be hard to make a generalization like that, but I did recently watch the first episode of Dahmer on Netflix.
Yeah.
And it was very good, but, you know, disturbing, but it should be, you know, about how cops just, you know, had let, you know, victims go ignored, and, you know, when they had warnings of this guy.
How long ago was Dahmer?
This was 80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whereabouts?
Milwaukee.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was really well done. But, you know, you have to have a strong constitution to, you know, because he was a messed up guy. And he was killing them in his apartment. And people were, and he cannibalized some of them. And people were complaining about the smell and of his apartment, and he's trying to make excuses for that. It was just very just intriguing, but in a horrible sort of way. So,
yeah.
But I will watch more of it. I haven't watched the entire series, but usually, later in the evening when I want to sit down and watch a little streaming, I'll go with something like King of the Hill or Schitt's Creek or something.
Good shows.
Just to get a good laugh or something, yeah.
I was going to ask you, actually, like, is it tough writing about these subjects? Like, does it get hard?
Some of them are so fascinating and so long ago that it doesn't, you know, but there are disturbing parts, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And I've written different angles in two of my books about the Oakland County child killer
case. What was that one?
And that was in the late 70s, early 80s. There were like four kids who would disappear and then found dead and had been molested. And this was in Oakland County primarily. So, I mean, that was, you know, within my memory, and it was, you know, involving children. And so, I mean, there are certain ones that I've written that I might take myself away from and work on something a little bit lighter for a bit and then come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's not like I have nightmares or anything like that.
Okay.
Actually, yeah. Speaking of that, this is a tangent, but I did have, I told you about my fondness for, you know, for fictional crime shows too and stuff like that. Big Sopranos fan, but for like three nights in a row, I don't know what was going on in my mind at that time, but three nights in a row, I had this, a nightmare, and it wasn't like the nightmare was that I owed Tony Soprano a favor. And then I was waiting to hear what it was going to be. And it's like, oh my God, you know. And so anyway, I've never gotten nightmares from the stuff I've written, even though that's true. But yeah, I guess when you're talking about the mob, it's a whole different, yeah.
Who's your favorite character from that show?
Oh, Polly Walnuts.
Polly? Okay.
How about you?
Yeah. I like Silvio.
Silvio's good. Yep.
He's my favorite.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Because I just like that he's very subtle, and he's kind of the right-hand guy, and he's the support beam for
That's
Tony.
That's true. But I guess I like Paulie's outrageousness.
Yeah.
I mean, and just his quips, which I, you know.
They're great.
Yeah.
They're funny.
I won't repeat, but yeah.
Another, you know, honorable mentions. I really like John Sacramone, Johnny Sack.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I like him a lot.
Well, Christopher Moltisanti is a great character.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was glad to see that later on he got an Emmy for it. But he was so, what an awful guy.
I know.
Because he was the one who would just, you know, like even with his, just on a whim, would kill somebody.
Yeah.
And Tony never did that. I mean, Tony at least had the you know, it's like, not like he was a great guy, but it always had something to do with business with him. Mm. But some of these other guys, like somebody pissed off, you know, Christopher, and he would shoot him.
Yeah.
Like even with his AA sponsor.
Yeah.
And he just
the film just screenwriter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And just out of the blue, shoots him in the head.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So yeah. Fascinating character, but mm-hmm. a horrible, horrible guy.
Yeah. I also really liked Little Carmine. Carmine Jr.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just because he was very silly.
Yeah.
But he almost ran the family.
Right.
Kind of.
Well, what about in that one where he and Christopher went to the went to Hollywood and wanted to get those...
Ben Kingsley?
They were bugging Ben Kingsley, and they wanted to get those bags of swag. And, yeah.
Carmine was silly. I loved his little anecdotes, and he would purposefully like mispronounce or misconstrue words.
Oh, right, right.
So silly.
Right. And I think we got to discuss the white elephant in the room.
Yeah. Stuff like that. I'm trying to think of another example. Oh, I have like 30 pictures under my subspecies.
Oh. Yeah.
It's just silly stuff like that. I love that TV show.
Oh, yeah.
There's another show that HBO did right around that same time, which I love too. It's called The Wire. If you've
ever
seen it.
I've never seen that, but I actually should get HBO Max back so that I can watch that.
Phenomenal. A very quotable. Reminds me a lot of Sopranos too. Oh, phenomenal, phenomenal show.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Breaking Bad. I mean, Breaking Bad was, I've heard good things. I've actually never seen it.
Oh, okay. But. Yeah, I think you will like the character of Jesse. And well, it's just so fascinating to, and you're not really even sure at any point in watching this, at least for me, that I liked Walter White.
The main guy.
The main guy. But I empathized with them in certain areas, and it's like the fascinating, it was just the fascinating journey of this, starts out being kind of a meek, you know, milquetoast of a guy, and he ends up being the devil, as mm-hmm. Jesse calls him toward the end, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, he just, it's an amazing transformation, and just the... Yeah, Vince Gilligan, just what a wonderful job of weaving in and out that, you know, how he gets from there to there and all the things that happen and, the, you know, just spends his life covering his tracks and, mm-hmm. you know, looking over his shoulder and all this, but he's just drunk on the power. And yeah, it's a really fascinating show.
You wrote in your book a little bit about organized crime. You had one story in there on, was it the Purple Gang?
Yeah.
Is what they were called. Yeah. When was this, like Prohibition days kind of, or before?
Yeah, it was during Prohibition that they got really powerful, but also during the 20s. And I wrote more about this in my third book, that they also had, like there was a thing called the Cleaners Dyers War in Detroit, and the cleaners and dyers, there were a whole bunch of industrial cleaning facilities. And they would, they had they were competing, so their prices were really low. They were, you know, just limping along because, and so they had to, some would call it collusion, you know, to get together and raise the prices and agree to raise the prices. So they're not, everybody trying to undercut everybody is not doing anybody any good. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but the mob got involved in it, and they were, you know, mandating that, you know, this and that, and they all, while they were getting involved in the unions and stuff too, but they, if a cleaner dyer shop did not want to go along with them, they would resort to tactics like they would leave maybe a stick of dynamite just sitting there on the front stoop, so that as they come in the morning, that's going to greet them. I think they get the message.
Wow.
Another thing was they would set off stink bombs inside these facilities so that, and it would permeate all the linens in the store so that they would be useless. They couldn't get that stink out. And so it would just destroy them financially, because every piece of cloth in that entire building was now unusable. And so, yeah, so they did stuff like that, and you know, all to get their fingers into the pie of the cleaners and dyers businesses.
Were these businesses really, really popular back then? Like,
yeah, well, I guess I don't know a ton about them, but there were a lot of them, and they would do like uniforms. They would they might do linens for a hotel. So it wasn't like, you know, you as a, you know, your household wouldn't take your laundry there.
Okay.
I don't think. You'd probably use one of those old washers with a ringer on it and all that. But
were they like automotive related as far as like the uniforms?
I don't know. They might have been. Mm-hmm. It might have been like shops and stuff like that too. Yeah, where they're getting them greasy and they put on, everybody's got the, they provide the coveralls and you put those on.
Okay.
That very well could be. That might have had something to do with it as well.
Okay.
But I think, yeah, they were for a lot of different industrial clients. Yeah.
I didn't know. So the organized crime or like the mob had a like fairly big presence
in Detroit. Yeah, they did in that, and then they were also more flamboyant, and you know there were several headline murders and stuff that occurred around that time, and that I do a thing about the Mel Flores murder in there too, and so they really you know, I didn't experience it, so I don't know. But I mean, they did things that I don't think they would have done in later years, because they were like there was a, they were helping rig local elections and, you know, and getting involved in stuff and just, you know, they had like a, I'm sorry, I might have spoken on it, not so much about elections, but they had like, they had local politicians in their corner.
Mm.
And they were, there was a lot of corruption, and there was a radio personality in the 20s who was speaking out against that, and he was speaking out against the mob and the politicians that they owned, and they came into a hotel and shot him, like just like something, you know, like more than one guy. It was like something off The Godfather or something.
Yeah.
Excuse me. It was just bursting in and
blowing
them away in the lobby, or, you know, of a hotel. So yeah, they would do higher profile, but then after Prohibition and after the Purple Gang finally kind of fell apart and these new guys came on, they were much more low key. And they didn't call themselves anything flashy like the Purple Gang. I think it was, I can't remember exactly what the name was, but I have it. I should have brought in a copy of my new book to refer to it. But it was something like the Detroit Incorporated or something. It just sounded like, and I don't know if that was the name, but it just sounded corporate.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to, they were still had their fingers in bad stuff and would get rid of, I'm sure they would rub people out. But nothing quite so public as going into a hotel lobby and you know, blowing away a local radio personality. And
yeah,
like that.
Jeez.
So,
wow.
So yeah, they kind of they got, I guess, their PR. I know that the Purple Gang back in the '20s, I think probably found it good PR to do these high-profile crimes, because if you want to do create a certain kind of image, but then in the '30s the prevailing mobsters, I think, had a different vision of what good PR was. Not just that,
changed their tune a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, thank you so much. We're right at, I want to be respectful of your time. This is fascinating.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it, and I appreciate you asking me to come speak with you. So
absolutely. No, thank you for doing this. And your book is very fascinating, and
thank you.
I mean, lots of history too in here that I had no idea about. I like that you include that too, those little bits. I'm trying to think of an example, the fur trade an example, with the French coming to Detroit and, sending furs back to King Louis. That I think that's really cool that you include those things in the book too. Really quick.
Well, actually, if you want to know more about, both, some of the dark spots on the history of both, like, Antoine de la Mothe Cadillac, the founder of Detroit.
Oh, right. Cadillac, yeah.
And also Chief Pontiac, who had, rallied several tribes to try to oppose primarily the British, who they really didn't get along with. Mm. And, but anyway, there are dark stories about both of those guys, among many others, Henry Ford, the weird Kellogg brothers, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
One other thing, for people to find your books or to find more about you, should they go to Amazon, or do you have a website, social media page?
I have a website domain, and I'm doing it with Squarespace, and I got to get off my keister because I really kind of dread it, because I don't really want to design a, but I know I'm just going to do something simple. No. Yeah, and that when that is up and running, it will be called bloodonthemitten.com.
Okay.
That's what I have the domain name. However, for right now, I do have a Facebook author page, and it's just called Tom Carr Author.
Nice.
So no spaces, just Tom Carr Author. If you go onto Facebook and look for that, you'll find it.
Awesome. I'll include a link to that in the description of the episode.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
And best place for people to buy your books, Amazon or?
Amazon or ask at your local bookstore in Michigan, because it's all over Michigan and even a little bit outside of Michigan, but primarily Michigan because it's Michigan focused. And yeah, I mean, I like to promote local bookstores. So if you have one nearby and they, you know, go ask if they have it, and if they don't, you know, ask them why not.
Yeah.
But I mean, so yeah, but Amazon, it is on there, and by all means, it, you know, order it from Amazon if, you know, if that's the most convenient thing for you. I just do like to support the local bookstores.
Oh, 100%. Well, Tom, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
The pleasure is mine.
Yeah. Thank you for doing this. Really great book, by the way. And I look forward to reading your other books as well.
Excellent.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. My name is Chris. This has been Cheatash. Take care, everybody.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Bite Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Add color to your home's exterior with LED outdoor string lights. They're perfect for holidays or get-togethers, and they can be scheduled to automatically turn on or off. View our entire selection of Bite Electric smart home products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week. Save.